Penguin Random House Audio presents The Last Woman in the Forest by Diane Lebeck. Read for you by Emily Rankin and Robert Fass, with Rebecca Lohman, Alex McKenna, Monica Felice Smith, and Aaron Spencer, and including a note read by the author. Part 1. As soon as there is life, there is danger. The Baroness de Stahl-Holstein, Anne-Louise Germain Necker.
Prologue. Victim number one, Natasha Freeman. Natasha was the prettiest of all the girls, with long reddish-brown hair, the color of brindle. She was a little over 5'6" and 2 inches taller in the boots that she wore. She wasn't from Montana, though that was where she had lived for the past 4.5 years. Natasha was from Massachusetts, where her father still lived in Franklin, one town over from where the Patriots played. Natasha didn't care for Massachusetts, and she wasn't a Patriots fan. Natasha was interested in cowboys, and had her heart set on marrying one. She didn't know anything about cattle or ranching, or cowboys for that matter. So she left Massachusetts 5 years after her mother passed away, and drove to towns where cowboys lived. Lately, she'd been thinking about moving back to Massachusetts, or somewhere close to Franklin, like New Hampshire, because she missed her father, who had never remarried. And the only cowboy Natasha had loved had left her for someone else. She would save a little more money, finish her coursework. She would visit her father, find another job. Maybe schools would be hiring. Natasha and the cowboy had been living on a gentrified ranch outside Montana City. The cowboy didn't own the ranch, but he helped take care of the cattle, and he and Natasha had a sweet spot in an apartment above the barn. Natasha was working as a teacher's aide in a second-grade classroom 4 miles from where they lived. She liked the children and hoped that soon she and the cowboy would marry and have their own family. 2 evenings a week, Natasha made the 2-hour drive to Missoula, where she was enrolled at the University of Montana. The cowboy paid for her classes. He'd said she'd make a good teacher, but he'd gotten lonely on the night she'd been away, and on the other nights when he'd wanted her to come to bed, and she'd stayed up at the kitchen table studying and drinking so much coffee that she didn't go to bed at all. She might have forgiven him. He'd said a man had needs. She tried to tell him she was sorry, that she would cut back on her classes, that she would stop staying up so late. But the man wasn't interested in reconciling. He was interested instead in a woman he'd met, a cute little thing at the feedlot, who had been buying dog food for her allergy-sensitive Irish setter. That was when Natasha left the cattle and the sweet spot above the barn. She moved into an apartment in Helena that she could afford on her teacher's aide salary. She continued to make the 2-hour drive, 2 nights a week, to the University of Montana. She didn't think about cowboys or big skies or the smell of cattle. She'd think of her father and the picture of her mother on the bureau beside his bed. Brian Freeman, who told his daughter she had her mother's eyes, said he wasn't lonely even though he missed his daughter. He had his job and his friends. He watched the Patriots and went to church and threw office parties. Natasha wasn't like her father. She didn't have any friends. When the cowboy walked out of her life, she'd lost the only friend she'd had. Natasha liked the class she was taking the spring after the cowboy and the little woman and the Irish setter moved in together. Creative drama and dance was offered through the theater department and was required for education majors. The course focused on the use of drama and dance as types of educational tools. Natasha was especially fond of the dance portion of the class. She enjoyed the way the music entered her body and rooted her someplace else, her childhood perhaps, when her mother would sway behind the steering wheel to the melody of a song on the radio, and her fingers would tap out the tempo as she drove. Her voice would sing off key, and Natasha would change the station. Then her mother would swat her daughter's hand and laugh and change the station back. Natasha wondered if her mother had been swaying to the music and singing off key when she slid on the black ice and crashed into a guardrail. While paramedics rushed to the scene, Natasha waited to be picked up from her seventh grade CCD confirmation class at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Natasha didn't own a cell phone then, and everyone else at the parish had already left. She thought her mother would be arriving soon, and continued to sit on the curb beside the parking lot. She finally gave up waiting when her fingers began to turn numb and decided to walk the 7 miles home. After 30 minutes, she saw Papa Gino's on her right. She went inside and asked to use a phone. A patron overheard her and said she could use his. She dialed her mother's number, but the call went to voicemail. Then she called her father. He picked up on the first ring. "Oh, God. Oh, God." He was crying. He said he was sorry. He told her he'd be right there. The creative drama and dance class was supposed to end at 9. It often let out early, and Natasha would stop by one of the clubs where a local band would be playing. She'd ordered a margarita and find a seat somewhere toward the back of the room. She'd drink her margarita slowly to make it last and let the music loosen up something inside her, all that brokenness that she'd never paid much mind to. She'd find hope on those nights, a brief levity, like a rising tide that would carry her east along Interstate 90 to the exit for Highway 12. She'd head over the Highlands, a 50-mile stretch, to the small apartment she'd yet to call home. As she drove, she'd hum tunes from whichever club she'd been at and imagine a life different from the one she had. Maybe she'd marry a teacher, or an electrician, or a dentist like her dad. These were Natasha's thoughts on that cold Wednesday evening in early December. She'd been listening to music at the Top Hat on West Front Street. She'd even ordered a second drink. She'd liked the band that was playing. After she'd listened to the band and had begun to make the drive to Helena, she'd felt her sadness lift more than it had on previous days. By the time she took the exit for Highway 12, it was later than usual for her, just past 11, and there was little traffic, only a solitary vehicle here and there. That was why she was startled when a truck came up behind her and flashed its lights. She was a couple of miles outside the little town of Elliston, with about a half hour more to go to her apartment. She thought the driver behind her might want to pass, so she slowed down and veered onto the shoulder. But she'd forgotten about the warmer temperatures that day. She hadn't anticipated how soft the shoulder would be. Her right front tire sank a good several inches and then began to spin. Within seconds, her back right tire was spinning as well. The truck that had been flashing its lights had already sped on. Natasha kept a shovel in the extra cab of her truck. She climbed out, opened the extra cab extension door, and retrieved the shovel. She wasn't worried. She'd gotten stuck before, and despite the fact that the sky was dark and she didn't have a lot of room on the shoulder to work, she was still in a good mood. She dug slush and mud out from around the right front tire, but no matter how much she dug, the ground remained soft. For a moment, she thought of the cowboy and wished she could call him for help. But then she thought of the cowboy's girlfriend. She would call for a tow truck before she would call her ex-boyfriend, even though she knew the tow truck would cost her more than what she had in her bank account. After 15 minutes, she heard a vehicle approaching from behind her and soon saw the headlights of a truck coming around the corner. She'd left her own vehicle.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?